good afternoon, Juneau. It's just exactly 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore going to be your host today for Juneau Afternoon. A great lineup of guests going to show us some choices for this weekend and things we can do around here. The release party for this year's edition of Tidal Echoes, the University of Alaska Southeast's art publication, is going to be this weekend, and so we'll have some folks to tell us about that. Father John Deere is in town. He's been brought here to talk about peace, and is quite a world authority on how to move toward peace. And so we'll be talking to him for a moment or two. Richard Radford and Adi Nasia will drop in to tell us about AWARE's Walk a Mile in Her Shoes program. And Sitka author John Straley will come by to tell us about Cold Storage Alaska, his latest book. And we'll close out the show today hearing from Perseverance Theater's new production, Boeing, Boeing. So all of that on Juneau Afternoon. Stay tuned now for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native Americans from across the U.S. are holding protests on the National Mall this week. Matt Laszlo reports on why a pipeline debate has brought them to D.C.
Here in Washington, the debate over the Keystone XL pipeline, which will deliver tar sand oil from Canada to the Gulf Coast, has centered on whether it will create jobs or increase global warming. But the tribes that would be impacted say the debate should be about what it would mean for their sacred lands. That's why Cyril Scott, president of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe of South Dakota, is joining dozens of other Native leaders on the mall this week.
We're trying to save our grandchildren, their grandchildren. This land is not ours. We have borrowed it from the future generations. So we need to leave it just as we found it, or as close as we could.
Tribal leaders have been educating national media about the high crime rates in Indian Country. A part of their argument against the pipeline is that bringing in hundreds of non-Native contractors to build the pipeline will lead to more sexual assaults in their communities. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Representatives of Pacific Northwest tribes met with Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell Thursday. At a conference in Washington State, Jewell discussed federal efforts to address economic and social issues and climate change. Jewell highlighted federal assistance to tribes to recover from droughts, floods, wildfires, and snowstorms. 9 area tribes participated in the event, and some national tribal leaders were there, including the president of the National Congress of American Indians. Samuel Jesse Smith was a Navajo code talker who served in the military during World War II. The 88-year-old died last week after an illness. Reporter Ashley Gross traveled with Smith to some Pacific battlefield sites several years ago for the making of a documentary and has this remembrance of him.
When the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, Smith was just 16, but he fudged his age to get into the Marines. In 2006, Smith sat at an airport gate and remembered how his grandfather, a medicine man, told him he was too young to go to war.
Grandson, you're still a punk. You're not even a man yet. And he said, I bet you haven't had sex yet. And I thought right there, what does sex have to do with me going in the combat? I'm going to do a job and defend my country, my land.
Smith went to boot camp in the summer of 1943, and his grandfather gave him a black arrowhead and an eagle plume for protection. Smith wanted to be a pilot, but the Marine brass tapped him to send battlefield messages in his native language. He fought in 4 Pacific battles, including Iwo Jima. He narrowly escaped getting mowed down by Japanese machine guns.
Was that scary when they'd come running at you?
I don't know what is scary. When somebody runs at you to kill you, you kill first.
Still, he wasn't able to forget what he had seen. Smith had nightmares that were so vivid he once broke his toe kicking the bedroom wall. In later years, Smith received medals for his service as a code talker, but he said there was another kind of recognition he cared about even more.
One thing that mattered to me was my grandpa. He promoted me to a man. That was important to me.
Smith said he wasn't sad he never got to be a pilot. Historians agree the code talkers were invaluable.
That's how the war was won. Period.
A service for Smith was held on April 21st in New Mexico. For National Native News, I'm Ashley Gross.
Today we remember George Horst Tapscher Sr., who passed away in April 2013. He was one of the first Native American museum curators in the U.S. Horst Tapscher Sr. was in charge of the Plains Indian Museum at the Buffalo Bills Historical Center in Wyoming. He also worked at the National Museum of the American Indian and was involved in books, film, and television. The Gros Ventre Man was 75 years old at the time of his death. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Support comes from listeners like you and T.K. McGuire's in the Prospector Hotel, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner with First Friday's wine tastings from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. More information at T.K. McGuire's, 586-3737.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for...
Well, we're not doing the Writer's Almanac right now. We'll be doing that in a little bit. Right now, we have a very interesting guest who has been arrested more times than most of us have, but all in a very, very good cause. Father John Deere is here and is going to be speaking on three occasions here in Juneau. He'll be giving a speech tonight at 7 p.m. here at our KTOO new 360 studio. And then there's a workshop that lasts most of Saturday on living the nonviolent life. And then he'll be speaking at Chapel by the Lake on Sunday at 4 p.m. So welcome to Juneau.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad we could have typical Juneau weather for you.
Oh, I thought it's like this every day, the whole year.
Year round. never rains here. And
so
like that,
beautiful. So beautiful.
It is, indeed. You've lived quite an exciting life since you kind of came to a realization, I think, in your college years,
mm-hmm.
that you were sort of called to go pound on airplanes and get tossed in jail.
Yeah.
I'm making light of something, but I think your quest has been serious, but I also love the comment that you made in your book about the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu having a wrestling match.
Oh, gosh.
Who should be killing who.
I just spent a month in South Africa and spent a whole day with Archbishop Tutu, who's a good friend of mine. And
he nominated you for the Nobel Peace Prize.
He did. It's amazing. And he's 82. He's under constant death threat since he was 13, and he was leaving the next day for Iran. And the first thing he said to me, now, John, we have to be working for justice and peace till the day we die. Mm-hmm. I was mighty impressed. But he's a really funny guy, mm-hmm. and he's full of life, and he's changing the world. And I always say to other activists, that's what I want. I don't want to be angry and bitter or, depressed or hopeless. Living life to the full and working for change. And that's... what I've been doing for 35 years since I got out of college and traveled the war zones of the world, organizing hundreds of demonstrations, been arrested a lot in protests, and teaching peace and nonviolence wherever I go, especially to church people who are all for war and violence, I sometimes think, and trying to advocate the vision of a more nonviolent world. It's the most important thing we all need to be talking about. And I love Alaska, and I'm happy to be here, and I want to encourage Alaskans, to live up to the beautiful nature around you and become peacemakers. You live in a very important place. I think you probably don't realize, the power you had if you really could be a light to the rest of the United States. Anyway, these are the things I'll be talking about this week.
It occurs to some of us.
Huh? Yes, of course. I just kind of encourage you on the work of peace.
It occurs
and
to the organization that brought you here, I think.
Yes.
As well, Elaine Schroeder is sitting here in the studio being very quiet, but I wanted you to briefly tell us about the organization that is responsible for bringing Father Deere to town.
Actually, three.
Yeah.
People for Peace and Justice, which mm-hmm. was formed pretty much near 9/11, to advocate for peaceful solutions to international conflict. And we opposed the invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan and on and on and on. We're also supported this event, John Deere coming, is Veterans for Peace and Northern Light United Church. So three of us are sponsoring him.
And Northern Light United Church has a long history of cooperating with those two organizations because of
and working on social justice issues.
Right. I'm interested. I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but I know that you've been rather controversy around having been separated from the Jesuits.
Mm-hmm.
In the letter that you wrote to the Catholic, I think it was the National Reporter, mm-hmm. You said that you weren't sure that you were going to remain in the priesthood.
Yeah, well,
where are you with that?
You'd think. Everybody would be for peace and nonviolence, but you'd be surprised, including church people. You know, I've been a Jesuit for 32 years, a priest for 21 years, and, you know, from day one, I've been, how should I put it? They've been trying to stop my public work for peace and justice, and it's tragic. The Jesuits, such a progressive order within the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And I knew loved the Jesuits who were assassinated in El Salvador in 1989. I don't know if you remember that, Pat, but that was really a life-changing experience. Anyway, these last 10 years, especially under Bush and the war in Iraq, the church leaders have moved farther to the right. A lot of us are very upset with what's happening in the world and the church. And so I was just under massive punishment from bishops around the United States who pushed the Jesuits to stop me, and they tried. And so I finally left, and I'm hoping to stay a priest and join a Catholic diocese on the West Coast. I'm in negotiations with that right now. So we'll see. You know, it's always my calling, but as a priest, to work for justice and peace, because Jesus was nonviolent and said things like, blessed are the peacemakers, love your enemies, put down the sword. And, I mean, he was a peacemaker first and foremost. And my argument has been, or my reflection has been, you know, if you're going to follow this guy, you have to be a person of peace and love and nonviolence, which means no Christian can, dare I say it, have a gun, support war, send their kids to the military, or support any form of violence or corporate greed. Everything is about this whole new vision of a world of nonviolence. This is what Gandhi and Martin Luther King said. Everything I'm saying is what our greatest people have always said. And the more you say it, you know, it doesn't go over well. But the guy I follow got killed, so I figure I'm doing the job description, Pat. I'm trying to make you laugh here.
Well, I know that you started one of the chapters of your current book with, I think, about 12 quotations from Gandhi.
Yeah.
One after another after another. And essentially it was almost like being hit repeatedly over the top of the head by Gandhi's saying the same thing in so many different ways, which unless you know who you are, you cannot first of all work for peace and justice.
It's very
and I think that's the point of your a big part of your book.
Well, first of all, I wrote a book on Gandhi, and I read the 100 collected works of Gandhi, which was totally over the top, and about 50 biographies. Went to India with Gandhi's grandson, Arun Gandhi, who's still alive. We traveled for a month and met. Went, lived in all the places Gandhi lived. So I've been studying him my whole life. And I don't know, it's amazing how we ignore him. And everything he said is morning, noon, and night. We have to be people of nonviolence. And the quote one of the quotes I put at the beginning of my new book, The Nonviolent Life, is nonviolence is the highest form of conscious living.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's all the world religions, or even just secular humanism, in a nutshell. If you're a full human being, or Christian, or Buddhist, or Jewish, you're a person of nonviolence. So this book of mine, which I'll be talking about over the weekend, you know, I've been trying to unpack Gandhi and Dr. King, not to mention Jesus, for 35 years. And how do we talk about nonviolence again? So in a nutshell, my thesis, Pat, is nonviolence requires three simultaneous attributes. First, you got to be nonviolent to yourself. While you're doing that, second, you got to try to be nonviolent toward every human being on the planet and all creatures and all creation. And third, at the same time, you got to be part of the global grassroots movements of nonviolence. And Gandhi and King and the great people did all three. Very few of us manage this holistic vision of nonviolence. Like, we might be activists.
Amen.
But our lives are a mess.
Yes.
Or we might be really nice and our lives are very peaceful. But we're not involved in ending the 50 wars, 20,000 nuclear weapons, catastrophic climate change, 4 billion people in poverty. And I think if you're not involved, then you're complicit in systemic evil. So nonviolence is hard. It's the simplest thing there is. It's the hardest thing there is. And I hope we can all start talking about it. And I, you know, it's just so tempting in Juneau, or Alaska, I suppose, just to sit back and enjoy life and look at the mountains. And that's part of peacemaking, but we got to get up and help end the violence and the destruction of the world as well. And that's why I want to encourage my friends in peace and justice work in Alaska to keep at it and be part of the many new movements that are happening. I always quote Archbishop Romero. The day he was killed, he said, nobody can do everything, but everybody's got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Very wise.
John Deere, you're going to be talking tonight at 7 o'clock here at 360 North, and then there's a day-long workshop for which you have to be registered. Is that, Elaine?
No, you can register at the door
at
9 a.m. at Northern Light United Church.
And is there a fee for the workshop?
There's a $50 donation, but
right.
Pay as you can.
Okay, good. And that's from 9 to 4 p.m. tomorrow. And then on Sunday, another opportunity to hear Father Deere speak at Chapel by the Lake at 4 p.m. All of this sponsored by the Juneau People for Justice, Northern Light United Church, and Veterans for Peace.
You got it.
Thank you so much for coming into the studio. Thank you so much for coming to Juneau and telling us about all this.
Thank you,
Thanks, Pat.
Lay down your arms, sort of a little music to celebrate the fact that Father John Deere will be here in town talking about peacemaking. Right now, I have a group of people in the studio who are here to tell us about a really interesting race, walk, run that is sort of a benefit for the AWARE shelter. So with me right now are Richard Radford and Audie Nicia, and they're here to talk about Walk a Mile in Her Shoes. What is this? Tell me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet. Welcome aboard.
Great. Yeah, so I'm the community engagement advocate at AWARE.
Okay.
And one of my jobs there is to engage boys in the community into thinking about making healthy decisions and developing into good men.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the issue with that is getting men involved and also in that process. So this is one of many ways that we're working on getting men in the community, Juneau men, involved in helping guiding men.
And so this is a walk-run event?
Yeah.
It's coming up when?
So it's on Saturday. It's tomorrow morning. We're going to be at the Jack, and we'll be there at probably 8 setting up, and runners get up earlier than we do, so they'll probably be coming in about that time. And
event starts right at 9, mm-hmm. so be there by 9, ready to go.
Mm-hmm. We'll be talking a bit. The marchers are going to be probably a little bit slower than the runners, so the runners will be going off on their way, and we'll hopefully get to talk to both groups before they take off.
Mm-hmm.
The event is part of an international movement of men marching and speaking out against violence against women. And one of the neat things about AWARE is that not only do we provide safe shelter for women and children who have experienced domestic violence or sexual assault, but we have an entire program and department that gets to think about primary prevention and think about, you know, what can we do to change our community norms so that when our children are our young adults, they don't we don't have a community that has these statistics that we do today where, you know, in Juneau, according to the 2011 UAA victimization survey, over 55% of women in Juneau have experienced intimate partner violence, sexual violence, or both in their lifetime. So, you know, this is an event for men and women, but really we're inviting men to come and connect with us. And, you know, we are learning as we're trying to figure out how to engage men. AWARE historically has not been out there partnering with men, and we know that we can never prevent intimate partner violence, sexual violence without these relationships. And so we're doing a number of different programs in the community, and this is just one way to come out and speak up and stand up against violence and connect with other men that share that value.
What are some of the other programs?
Well, Richard actually might be able to say a little bit more because he's just spent the last couple of days working with 40 coaches mm-hmm. Who gathered together from across the state for a program called Coaching Boys Into Men.
There was a piece in the paper the other day. Yeah, there's 43 coaches from communities all over Alaska who came, and Coaching Boys Into Men is another big sort of national movement, and it's a way of finding ways that men who are already in positions to be mentors can sort of implement these programs to talk to their boys about things that might not come up otherwise. And in this case, it would be sports within the school system.
So coaches are given a curriculum and some questions to engage their teams around language, around consent, around respect. And then they are also invited to do an overtime project where they do something in their community within their school context to really challenge those norms of violence. So, you know, really recognizing that coaches have leadership to influence their sports teams and their boys have influence over their peer cultures. And so really challenging these boys to think about what are you consciously or unconsciously condoning or supporting? How can you use your popularity or your status, your subculture to share this message that no human being deserves disrespect, that all people deserve equality? And so in Juneau, we've been implementing that program for a couple of years, and we've got a couple of coaches that have been making this journey with us and having new conversations and really trying to think, how do we do this? We know it's possible. We know that violence is a learned behavior, and we really have hearts to create a community that doesn't tolerate violence the way mm-hmm. that our community does today. So,
mm-hmm. Richard, are you working with the Scouts at all?
Not yet, but I mean, it's definitely on the table. It's one day at a time. I would be interested in any. I think one of the things that we've talked about at work and when we were at the Coaching Boys Into Men training, we don't have men lined up out the door volunteering or coming. But part of the burden of that is also on me to reach out to men. And I think that there are men in the community who really want to get involved in, domestic violence prevention, sexual assault prevention. They just don't know where to start.
Are you fairly new to the to AWARE?
I'm not allowed to say that I'm brand new to AWARE, but yes.
As his supervisor. He's been with us for long enough.
So this role is a sort of a new step for
it
AWARE.
Is.
Yeah.
The position has been a new position to AWARE for about 2 years, mm-hmm. And Richard has been with us just for a few months, mm-hmm. and we're very happy to have his heart and dedication for this topic.
Mm-hmm. So we can expect more activities and other outreach efforts from your office.
Absolutely,
coming out of AWARE.
Yeah, we have a number of things coming up. You've heard of Girls on the Run. I think mm-hmm. that's been a really, really popular program in town, and we're working on one for boys, which I think will take off. And we're actually working.
Girls on the Run, for some of the listeners who might not know about it, is a program that actually goes through the school system
mm-hmm.
and then winds up with the people who work throughout the course of a term, I think, having a run. Have I got it right?
So mm-hmm. it's an after school program.
Yeah.
It's an after school empowerment program for 3rd through 8th grade girls. And AWARE oversees the program, but we work very closely with school counselors and volunteer coaches for implementation. So it's 12-week, 24 lessons, and the curriculum helps girls to develop their sense of character, self-confidence, positive body image, communication skills, and really just the ability to make healthy lifestyle choices. And as the curriculum builds, so does their physical activity, and so they build up to a 5K fun run. And actually, this season is really exciting for us because the founder of Girls on the Run International is joining us here in Juneau for the first time ever, and she is a world-renowned motivational speaker, very inspiring, and we have a couple of cool events on the horizon connected with that. We have a night to celebrate and honor women, and this is an invitation for men, women, children. It's a fundraising event and a chance to really get to hear a speech from Molly Barker. There'll be light appetizers. It's at the Rockwell on May 8th, 6:30 to 8:30, and folks can get tickets online at the Jack, or they can contact AWARE. And then on the 10th, we have our 5K fun run, which we have every season, and you know, we still have the opportunity for a few folks to volunteer or come out and experience the power of girls that go through this transformation through 12 weeks and meet their goal on that race day. So the Boys Run program is really exciting. It's been underway for a couple of years, and we're going to be piloting this fall. So that's a really big deal for AWARE and for the partners that we've been working on the project with.
I think that's a critical component of teaching young men to be nonviolent, is increasing their own sense of their own self-worth. Because I suspect that a lot of violent behaviors comes from people who are having problems with their own structure and their own internal structures.
That's great. There are a lot of risk and protective factors, and self-confidence is an important component.
Mm-hmm. So I know that the Girls on the Run is a program that has done a great deal to build a great deal of self-confidence. Some of the women who have been here because they were nominated for the awards for taking part in the community and those sorts of things have told me that they were involved in those programs.
Yeah,
so
it's a pretty fun program.
So, well, wonderful. The program that is coming up is tomorrow morning. Everyone should be at the Jack by 9 o'clock. Runners, of course, can show up as early as like 4 or 3 and get warmed up. But 8 is when they're actually going to be setting up for this. There'll be a brief talk before everyone takes off, and then runners will leave at 9 o'clock and walkers probably shortly thereafter. Where's the course go?
Well, it's going to be going across the bridge onto Douglas and then rounding back down the boardwalk. We also just found out that an unscheduled cruise ship is going to be visiting tomorrow.
Indeed.
So that should be a very interesting experience. I don't know if we clearly explained with Walk a Mile in Her Shoes. It's a national thing, but part of the event is encouraging men to wear high heels in the 1 mile march.
Uh-huh.
So I think we may take them down along South Franklin if there's some tourists out as well. So.
Okay,
we'll
so only in the walking, not in the running, because of foot damage and that sort of thing, right?
Right, absolutely.
Okay, right. So
we'll have some materials for for folks to make signs if they want to march with a sign, and we'll have plenty of high heels and large sizes, and some light snacks and refreshments and some inspirational words, and we'll gather together hopefully in the sunshine like it is today.
A wearer's walk a mile in her shoes tomorrow morning starting at 9 o'clock over at the Jack. Be there. Have a chance to either walk or run tomorrow morning starting at 9 o'clock. Be at the Jack for Walk a Mile in Her Shoes. And if you have your own high heels, bring them, but otherwise they'll have some there for you if you want to try doing this thing in high heels.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 25th of April, 2014. It's the birthday of the poet Ted Kooser, born Ames, Iowa, 1939. Who said, I had a wonderfully happy childhood. All this business about artists having to have terrible childhoods doesn't play with me. He started writing poetry because he wanted to be interesting, and poetry seemed a way of being different. Flunked out of graduate school, took a job at a life insurance company, worked there for 35 years, and wrote his poems first thing in the morning. Got up at 4:30, made a pot of coffee, wrote until 7, put on his suit and tie, and went to work. It's the birthday of the poet James Fenton, born Lincoln, England, 1949, author of Yellow Tulips, Dead Soldiers, many other collections of poems. James Fenton, who said the writing of a poem is like a child throwing stones into a mine shaft. You compose first, then you listen for the reverberation. It's the anniversary of the publication of Daniel Defoe's novel, The Life and Strange Surprising Adventures of Robinson Crusoe, 1719, story of a castaway, spends 28 years on a remote island before he's rescued, one of the very first English novels. Defoe was 59 years old when it was published. It was his first novel. Had a checkered career as a writer, did a lot of writing for pay, propaganda, and so forth. But Robinson Crusoe was a great bestseller, went through 4 editions in the first year, which did not, however, rescue Daniel Defoe from poverty. He died poor at the age of 70 in a rundown boarding house trying to avoid a debt collector. And it was on this day in 2003 The Human Genome Project announced that it had finished identifying and mapping the genes in human DNA. They found fewer than they were expecting to. They thought they'd find about 100,000, but it turns out we have only about 30,000, about the same as mice. And the genes themselves are mostly similar to mice and to other mammals as well. There were some biotechnology companies who expected to earn some money off the Human Genome Project, but in 2000, President Clinton declared that the sequences could not be patented and that the research should be given freely to the scientific community. Here's a poem for today by Ted Kooser, A Rainy Morning. A young woman in a wheelchair wearing a black nylon poncho spattered with rain is pushing herself through the morning. You have seen how pianists sometimes bend forward to strike the keys, then lift their hands, draw back to rest, then lean again to strike just as the chord fades. Such is the way this woman strikes at the wheels, then lifts her long white fingers, letting them float, then bends again to strike just as the chair slows, as if into a silence. So expertly she plays the chords of this difficult music she has mastered, her wet face beautiful in its concentration while the wind turns the pages of rain. A Rainy Morning by Ted Kooser from his collection Delights and Shadows, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
About 23 minutes before 3 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting today for Juneau Afternoon. In town on Monday, we have a really excellent concert coming up. Chick Corea and Bela Fleck are going to be here, and they're playing over at Juneau Douglas High School. So let's take a listen to some of their stuff. Thank you. music's by Bela Fleck, formerly of the Flecktones. Well, I think he's still of the Flecktones, anyway. And Chick Corea, and the two of them will be here on Monday night, 7:30 at JDHS. I heard yesterday afternoon when they did Arts Up that there might be about 30 tickets left. So if you're 16 tickets left, I'm told. So if you're thinking about going, you want to make a phone call right now. Maybe call a Jack and tell him to hold a couple of seats. They'll actually do a reservation over the phone. Here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Of all American presidents, just one might have halted the playing of Hail to the Chief so he could listen to an orchard oriole singing outside the White House. Any guesses which one? Here's a hint. His face is carved on Mount Rushmore. It's Theodore Roosevelt, an avid naturalist and bird observer from an early age. His very first publication was a list of 97 summer birds he'd seen in the Adirondack Mountains, published by the prestigious Linnaean Society. And he was only 19. He loved bird songs. As a boy, he even developed his own system for transcribing them. Roosevelt was truly the conservation president at a time when the country really needed one. During his presidency, 1901 to 1908, he helped establish 51 preserves for birds, 5 national parks, 18 national monuments, and 150 national forests. But, busy as he was, the birder president took time to list 91 bird species he saw, or heard, on the White House grounds, including that orchard oriole. Writers for Bird Note include Bob Sundstrom, Todd Peterson, Ellen Blackstone, Francis Wood, and Dennis Paulson. Our producer is John Kessler, and our executive producer is Chris Peterson. Today's show is brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, scholar Alexander Dolitsky, a native of Soviet Ukraine, discusses Russian-Ukrainian relations, looking back and looking forward before the Juneau World Affairs Council. Meet global leaders of the next generation at 9. Great Decisions in Foreign Policy returns to our lineup at 10 with Platts Energy Week at 10:30, BioCentury This Week at 11, and BBC News Night at 11:30. All tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
It's just about 16 minutes before 4 o'clock. I can read a clock. I know what that clock looks like. And my guest in the studio right now is going to tell us about the next production, which is almost, I think you're doing a preview.
Yeah, a pay-as-you-can this Sunday, and then also Wednesday as well.
Okay, well, Tom Robinold is here, and Tom is got to get out of here as quick as he can because he's got to go back and direct the Young Company again. Right?
Okay. That's right.
But you're here to tell us about Boeing.
Yes.
And that's not Boeing.
Nope.
No. But this is actually about airplanes.
Yeah.
Well, actually about the people who work on airplanes.
Right.
Great comedy line on this thing. As a matter of fact, such a great comedy line that it was written in France and then adapted to the London stage and then readapted, and it's a major thing in India, resulting in 2 Indian films. Oh, no, 1 Indian film and the other one is different country in the area over there. But anyway, both these films are copies of the same original piece, which was also produced in French as a film and on stage and in London on stage. Yeah. And the story of Boeing has got to be unique.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's an incredible story. It's about an American playboy living in Paris. I believe he's an architect who has 3 fiancés, 1 German, 1 American, and 1 Italian. And they're all flight attendants that work for the airlines. And so what happens is he juggles their schedules around so that he can have them all, you know,
On
3 different airlines,
yeah,
exactly.
So they're never in Paris.
They're never in Paris
at the
same time.
Exactly. They're never in London at the same time.
Exactly.
So now you've adapted this, of course, and this is Juneau with Delta and Alaska.
Right.
Ween Alaska Airways.
Right.
No. No, folks. We didn't do that. Right. Anyway, but anyway, what happens is Boeing puts a new, faster airplane on the schedules.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, all three of these ladies show up in town at the same time.
Exactly. And
a
then
serious,
the
serious.
Comedy ensues, yes. So you get to watch this this American sweat while he's trying to juggle three flight attendants who are all in his apartment at the same time, yes. And then he has his best friend from Wisconsin. And this, you know, in the American version, it's a friend from Wisconsin who shows up and tries to help him out. You know, he just pops into Paris. He's moving to Paris, and he helps his friend Bernard out. And that's Robert, who's played by James Sullivan. Mm-hmm. And it's also, I should note that if people saw God of Carnage, which was a pretty big hit, mm-hmm. Really good show, very funny, three out of the four people that were in that cast are actually working on this. And that's Brandon Dimery is the director. James Sullivan is playing Robert. And then there's Alison Holtkamp, and she's playing Gretchen. And they're just as good as they were in God of Carnage. So it's a great little comic setup.
So this is coming up on the end of a great season for Perseverance. But you aren't going into retirement or anything like that. There's
no.
a rep going on for the summer. Isn't that right?
There is.
Yeah.
There's no stop. We're going to keep charging on.
Right.
This summer, starting with June 28th, we open a show. And that's part of Summerfest. And Summerfest has The Blue Bear will be remounted. As well as a brand new play by Dave Hunsaker called Warriors, and that's about Alaska Native warriors throughout time. And then the latest Broadway hit, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike by Christopher Durang. It's a hilarious comedy. And that's part of Summerfest. And that will be taking place at the Jack. So what we're doing is we're actually turning the big area of the Jack, the big gym area, into a theater. We're actually installing a lighting grid. We're installing a stage. We're installing all sorts of, you know, seating. I think there's going to be about 180 seats in it. So it's a huge deal, and it's going to be a lot of work, and it starts, it almost seems like tomorrow.
When does it actually open?
It opens June 28th, and it runs through August 6th. And those three shows will run and rep. So I believe Wednesdays are the only days we won't have shows going on. At any other time, you can catch two of the three shows going on either Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it is a huge undertaking.
And I remember Art Roach talking at one of the plays I went to, and evidently there's a deal on buying the tickets for this.
Yes,
in other
there
words,
is.
You can buy all four. You can buy whatever you want.
Well, it's a flex pass, which stands for, you know, flexibility. So you have you buy a pass, and a pass will give you three entrance. It's like a punch card, so you can get into three different shows. Now the flexibility about it is you can either go to all three shows,
Blue Bear three times.
See Blue Bear three times. So mm-hmm. it's a great deal, and if you're a season subscriber, which before May 31st you get a huge deal off being a season subscriber. If you want to be a season subscriber, you get another discount off of Summerfest as well. So there's lots of discounts going on, especially for subscribers.
Mm-hmm. But back to Boeing. So preview Sunday night.
Sunday night and Wednesday.
When does the schedule start?
We open on May 2nd, mm-hmm. and we run through the 25th. So I believe it's the 28th. So May 2nd, and that's for the next 3 weekends after that. And that's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The last week we've added a Wednesday. So all of our shows have now a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday on the last
mm-hmm.
week.
And this is out at the theater, not.
Oh
not,
yeah, this
not
is out.
Jack.
No, this okay. is this is the bookend
Don't
of
want to
our season.
Anybody,
no,
we just talked about these shows.
There's
at the
a
Jack,
lot of stuff.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you can go anywhere you want. You're going to bump into a show that we're producing at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we just have a couple more minutes here. Tell me about Young Company.
Yes, Young Company started last night. We opened the Odyssey. There's 20 kids. The age range is from 9 to 14 years old, and we produced The Odyssey, and they did a great job. We had a sold-out crowd yesterday, and people were hooping and hollering for them when it was all said and done. It's a one-act play, and it's going great. The kids are extremely talented in this town, and it's been a joy to work with them. I directed the show, so mm-hmm. it's been a great time. And Young Company goes for 2 months, and then it culminates into a professional performance. We give them, you know, the full light sets, the whole deal.
So right now it's playing in the small theater?
It is. It's in the second stage on the Phoenix stage.
Right.
And it starts
does
it at 7:30.
Come down to the main stage for the last show?
No, it stays in there because right now Boeing is about to come up. So we have, like, as soon as Young Company ends, Boeing comes up mm-hmm. on the main stage. And the nights for that are basically from tonight to Tuesday. So we have Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. They're all at 7:30, except for Sunday is a 2 o'clock matinee.
So this is Homer's Odyssey.
This is Homer's Odyssey, yeah.
Oh, okay, so you have sirens and...
We have the sirens. We have a huge puppet that we've made for the Cyclops. Yeah, the sailors, the whole deal, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, including Hades is in there. Yeah, all the whole deal.
Hey, just not often that you get a chance to go to Hades.
And come back like Odysseus did.
At the end of the play,
yeah.
Right? Okay, well, Tom Robineau, thank you so much. Boeing again. Let's do the schedule just one more time so everybody's got it. So it's... Tonight, or Sunday.
Sunday is the preview. It's at 7:30.
7:30.
And then Wednesday's another preview at 7:30. And it runs from May 2nd through the 25th.
May 2nd through the 25th. So if you hold season tickets, you've already got that taken care
of.
But if not, there's really neat ways to get tickets to this. You can do it through either of the bookstores.
You can call.
Town.
Yeah, you can go to the Hearthside Books. We sell tickets. They sell tickets for us there.
Right.
You can go to our website and purchase tickets on our website. And you can call 463-TIXS, and we can hook you up with tickets.
Okay. Well, terrific. Great opportunities here. Folks, we're going to have John Straley on the show in just a few minutes, I hope, here. Right now, a little bit of music from our next concert guest. After Vela and the Flecktones, or Vela and Korea are here, this is David Bromberg.
I went out today, I hardly had a choice. Couldn't stand the sound of my own voice. You should have heard me talking on the telephone. All morning long, nothing good to say. You came and tried to help me, but I pushed you away. I said, I'm too hot to handle. You better leave me alone. Blue is falling on me again. No one hears me calling as it pulls me in. I try to fight it.
About 8 minutes before 4 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next guest is coming to us from sunny Sitka. Is it sunny down there, John?
It's a beautiful day here today.
Outstanding. We're having one of those ourselves. Hey, John Straley has written a totally different book than his previous works, Cold Storage Alaska. Folks, this is a tale worth sitting and reading. Took me I think one day to scoop my way through this thing, and I could not put it down. Heck of a book.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I really did, John. Particularly, I liked the way you scared the heck out of us that everyone was going to die and then made it come out so that at the end we were quite satisfied and nobody did. Nicely done.
Oh, good.
Except, well, there were burn victims and there's some of the violent things that we're used to having in your literature. But everybody came out of this okay, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a relatively cheerful for a depressive little town.
Mm.
We're fairly happy.
Yeah. And the bar gets rebuilt and all kinds of nice things happen. I'm giving too much away. I got to shut up now. Okay. So I wanted, one of the questions I wanted to ask is, we have two brothers here, one of whom goes off and sells cocaine and the other of whom stays home and takes care of mom.
Right.
So my question is, how much of the prodigal son were you thinking of?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I wrote this book years and years ago. And
I know. You finished it in, 2003 or something like that, and they wouldn't publish it?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah.
It went through a lot of different iterations, and I wrote it, and it was fairly dark, and I sent it to a woman who I've only met one time, but she was a fan of my other books. She's a librarian in a little town near Vancouver, Canada. And then she and I were in contact, and she looked, read it and said, well, it was interesting how many biblical allusions I had in it.
Certainly
and was. And I said, oh, really? And I was tempted to say, oh, yes, of course, I didn't plan all of those.
Yeah, you wanted to kind of lean back in your chair and say, oh, yes, of course.
Oh, yes, of course, I was aware of all of
those. But then you were afraid she'd ask you what part of Ecclesiastes that came from.
And it was funny. I had studied the Bible as literature in college at the University of Washington with one of my mentors who was a poet and ran. His name was Nelson Bentley, and it was a great influence on me. And he's passed on now, but I would love to tell him what an influence that was on me, because it must have seeped through. And I said, you know, to this woman who I dedicated the book to, named Sophie Rosen, and I said, Sophie, I'm really not aware of all these allusions. And she said, well, would you like me to point them out? And I said, sure.
Yeah, would you?
And so she pointed them out to me, and I thought, wow, you know, I had been aware of the Buddhist and the Tibetan Buddhist and the other allusions. And so in the third or fourth round of revisions, I was much more aware of the Christian allusions and the biblical allusions. And so I sort of wrapped them up and tied them together, and I made more use of them. And I was very grateful to Sophie Rosen for both pointing them out to me and for sort of pointing out a part of my imagination that I hadn't been aware of.
Yeah, it's that's a wonderful story, John. I wouldn't have guessed that it came that way, but then I'm looking at the fourth revision rather than the first revision. So, I think every author has a bunch of stories that are gathered up as you go, and then when you sit down and start actually making your fingers work, they come out and like that. And I need to be sure that we don't go away from this without talking about this great workshop that you're going to be pushing off or going to be doing tomorrow here in town. So from 1 to 4 in the afternoon at the Jack Gallery here on Juneau, you're going to be doing a workshop that basically is how to organize your life to write that book you've always talked about. And this is in conjunction with 49 writers.
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
And so, a lot of people have talked about working on a book, and some people are overwhelmed by it. But it's really a matter, for me, it's really a matter of just of both finding the time and learning how to what kind of discipline you need at the different stages of the project. And sometimes it's sometimes you have to discipline yourself for time, and sometimes you have to discipline yourself for numbers of words, and sometimes you just have to discipline yourself for just putting your rear end in a chair. And sometimes that's all you need to do, is just put your rear end in a chair. And the goal of it for me is that every day just it has to feel like a victory. You're just a little bit closer to your goal. And as the goal is to feel good at the end of every day. And if you do that, it doesn't take that long. You just have to do it. You know, it doesn't take that long, or it doesn't seem to take that long if you're happy at the end of every day.
John, we just have a very short period of time left. You're also doing a signing and a reading while you're here?
From 8 to 10 on Saturday night at the downtown library above the garage. I hope to see all my friends there.
Okay, Saturday night,
all
8 to 10.
All four or five of them.
Well, I think the crowd will be bigger than that. Saturday night, 8 to 10 at the public library downtown, but yep. Saturday, April 26th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Jack Gallery. You need to register online for this thing by going to 49writingcenter.org, or you can email 49writersjuno@gmail.com. They'll get you registered. There is a fee for the thing. I think it's $45 for members of 49 Writers and $50 for non-members. John Straley, author of Cold Storage Alaska, just came out. Great book, well worth the read, and that'll cause you to immediately hit the bookstore and go buy The Woman Who Married a Bear and The Curious Eat Themselves and The Big Both Ways. So go buy all of those, bring them to the reading, have John sign them, and then settle down for a good read. Nice
meal. Much.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate your coming on the show. Appreciate your coming to town. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right.
You bet. Bye-bye. So you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We broadcast on translators K276 AF in Juneau. In the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. We're on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're online at ktoo.org. And support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you very much, listeners like you. Time now for All Things Considered.